The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Cindy Fowler from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Dave's Garden e-newsletter, the Triangle Gardener magazine, the National Gardening Association e-newsletter, and maybe from Garden Smarts by Shelley Goldblum. We'll start with Dave's Garden e-newsletter. Autumn is a second spring when every leaf is a flower. That was said by Albert Pamus. Using Mini Pumpkins After Halloween by Melody Rose. Fall decorations brighten up the season. However, once Halloween is over, the collection of mini bumpkins is usually discarded. Many people don't realize that they are a tasty treat. Mini pumpkins are plentiful and inexpensive this time of year. Many produce stands and even supermarkets and big box stores offer a huge collection of small pumpkins for autumn decorations. They are inexpensive, colorful, and make for cheerful displays. There is usually a wide selection of shapes, textures, and colors, and they look so good displayed on piles around containers of mums and straw bales, and like the mums, are usually discarded after the season. These little pumpkins were once the backbone of our ancestors' winter menus, and we can prepare them in a number of different ways. Adding mini pumpkins to the menu. I'm writing about the mini, M-I-N-I, pumpkins, not the large orange jack-o'-lantern pumpkins. Those larger pumpkins are generally tougher in texture, the flesh stringy, and it takes a bit more effort to coax a tasty dish from one of those. They are best served to wildlife and farm animals or composted. The smaller ones are easier to handle, and you do not end up with tons of extra material. The little guys are just more accommodating and work better for a family side dish. Preparing mini pumpkins for roasting. We're all familiar with acorn squash and butternut squash. They are often offered year-round at most supermarkets. Well, these little mini pumpkins are squash, too. In fact, all pumpkins are members of the Cucurbitaceae family and are quite edible. It is just knowing how to use them that's the trick. If you select firm, unblemished fruit and display them out of the harsh weather, they should still be quite fine to use in recipes. These little pumpkins are often used in indoor displays and table centerpieces, so there's a good chance there's a few lurking that you can work with. Many commercial sources coat them in wax or preservative, though, so it's best to trim the outer skins from the pumpkins before cooking. This isn't all that hard if you slice your pumpkins into smaller sections first. I quarter these small squash with my big butcher knife and then slice each section into thin slips about 1/4 inch thick. These are very easy to peel with a paring knife. This takes the skins with their tuberous coatings away from the meat of the pumpkin and ready to cook. If you have grown your own, then you know exactly what is on the outside of your pumpkins and all they need is a good wash. Roasting mini pumpkins for a tasty side dish. Once you have the meat free from the skins, you can use it in any number of recipes. However, I've found a simple roasted medley is easy, nutritious, and tasty. The flavors embody the season, and this is easy enough that a cook of any skill level can produce a masterpiece. After I've sliced and peeled about 4 cups of various squashes, for this I used an acorn, a baby boo white pumpkin, and a colorful carnival type. I heat my oven to 425 and scatter my pumpkin slices on a large cookie sheet. Slice a large onion over all this. Drizzle the pieces with 3 tablespoons of melted butter or olive oil if you prefer, freshly ground pepper, smoked sweet paprika, and salt. For my salt, I use my special house blend that I keep in the pantry all the time. I take sea salt, the peel of a lemon, well washed, and a handful of fresh rosemary. Pulse all of this in the food processor until finely chopped, and place in the oven at 250 for 20 minutes. Pulse again and store. This seasoned salt is wonderful, and the lemon peel and herbs flavor it well enough so you actually use less. After seasoning, drizzle a couple of tablespoons of honey over all of this and toss to coat well. Instead of honey, brown sugar or maple syrup will work just as well. However, I like this recipe a bit more savory than sweet, so the sweetness of the honey is all I need. Place in the oven and roast for 15 minutes. Remove from the oven, toss, and turn the pieces a bit so to expose the other sides. The slices will caramelize nicely and actually do better than chunks because more of the vegetables are exposed to the direct heat. Return to the oven for another 10 minutes and your roasted decorative pumpkins are ready to serve. Other fall vegetables can be included if your family likes. Carrots, parsnips, rutabagas, and turnips all pair well with these little pumpkins. Many pumpkins are nutritious and easy to preserve for later. Including these autumn decorations as part of your menu is a great way to teach children about food. Chances are the supermarkets and big box stores have these little pumpkins reduced for clearance right now. The sliced or cubed pieces are easily frozen and can be added to soups and stews or roasted as above. There are many ways to prepare these autumn jewels, and they are so nutritious. Winter squash have high amounts of vitamin A and C, and even though they are mostly carbohydrates, they have compounds that help regulate the way a body metabolizes sugar after a meal. Even if you did not decorate them this season, pick up a few and give them a try. And now, from the National Gardening Association e-newsletter. Trees and plants always look like the people they live with, somehow. That was said by Zora Neale Hurston. A Gardener's Guide to Frost by Elliot Tozer. Elliot Tozer writes and gardens in Tappan, New York. Do consider dew. The dew point is the temperature at which the air is totally saturated with moisture. Television and radio meteorologists may state the dew point temperature during routine forecasts. The more moisture the air contains, the higher the temperature will be when the moisture starts to condense as dew, producing heat. And obviously, the higher the temperature, the less chance of frost. For example, a dew point of 43 almost certainly means no frost that night. Interestingly enough, frost is more likely to form on a dry evening when the air temperature is a warmish 50 and the dew point is a low 33 than when the air temperature is a cooler 43 and the dew point is 41. 6. Know your plants. The plant itself determines the likelihood of frost damage. Immature plants still sporting new growth into the fall are most susceptible, especially new growth. Frost tolerance tends to be higher in plants with maroon or bronze leaves because such leaves absorb and retain heat. Downy or hairy-leaved plants also retain heat and reduce wind drying of the leaves. Compact plants expose a smaller proportion of their leaves to cold and dry and winds. By the same token, closely spaced plants protect each other. What's a gardener to do? So you've checked the weather conditions and decide that, yes, Jack Frost is coming and protecting your plants is worthwhile. You'll want to do two things. First, cover your plants, both to retain as much soil heat and moisture as possible and to protect them against strong winds, which can hasten drying and cooling. Use almost anything to cover plants, newspapers, bushel baskets, plastic tarps, straw, or pine balls. Spun bonded fabric row covers will protect plants down to 30 degrees. polyethylene row covers to 28 degrees. Cover the whole plant before sunset to trap any remaining heat. Lightweight coverings, such as row covers and newspapers, should be anchored to prevent them from blowing away. Second, keep the soil moist by watering your plants the day the frost is predicted. Commercial fruit and vegetable growers even leave sprinklers on all night to cover plants with water. As the water freezes, it releases heat, protecting the plants, even though they're covered in ice. To prevent damage, the sprinklers need to run continuously as long as temperatures remain below freezing. And as you survey your garden's fading glory, you may take heart from the experience of John Loudon, a 19th century British horticulturist. Loudon stuck four stakes into a plot of grass to support a cambric handkerchief 6 inches above the surface, and found that the temperature beneath it remained 9 degrees warmer than the temperature of the surrounding air. Yes, you can beat the frost, at least for a few nights. Feel the breeze. Wind also influences the likelihood of frost. In the absence of wind, the coldest air settles to the ground. The temperature at plant level may be freezing, even though at eye level it's above freezing. A gentle breeze will prevent this settling, keeping temperatures higher, and save your plants. Of course, if the wind is below freezing, you'll probably have fried green tomatoes for tomorrow's supper. Check the moisture. Just as clouds and gentle winds are your friends, so are humidity and moisture. When moisture condenses out of humid air, it releases heat. Not much heat, true, but perhaps enough to save the cleomes. If the air is dry, though, the moisture in the soil will evaporate. Evaporation requires heat, so this process removes warmth that could save your peppers. Darn it. Okay, for the birds. How can I keep birds from flying into windows? Answer. More on pet manure. Many pet owners may pass to humans through handling, kneeling, or going barefoot in garden soil. As long as you don't handle it, or if you know it's parasite-free, you have no problem. If you live in a cold climate, spread the pet manure on the garden only in the winter, as freezing kills any parasite eggs that might be present. Still, Dr. Stelmach warns, do not ever touch it. It's safest to keep pet droppings out of your compost pile, cautions veterinarian Stelmach. Even in warm months, the compost may not get hot enough to destroy all the parasite eggs, and in the winter, the pile may not freeze hard enough to kill them. Poultry manure. Cow, horse, and sheep manure are well known as fertilizers, but Bill Hansen, who raises prize chickens at his Bangor, Wisconsin farm, has another brand he recommends. Bill produces fabulous raspberry and strawberry crops with the help of chicken manure. Once the berries have finished bearing, spread the manure between the rows thickly enough to keep the weeds down and the moisture in. Since most of the manure has been mixed with the poultry bedding material of sawdust, wood shavings, or corn cobs, you don't have to worry about it burning the plants. Where to find manure? The best bargains in town are not always in the shopping malls. If you're looking for a good source of free manure, Augusta, Georgia compost manufacturer Bill Bricker recommends a visit to a local slaughterhouse. Author's note. If you live in an urban area, you may think it's impossible to locate chicken manure for your garden, but you'd be surprised. Even large cities have small-scale breeders. We realized that after discovering our neighbor had kept a flock of bantam chickens in his garage for years, so discreetly that the other people on the block had no inkling. Most of these folks would be delighted to swipe manure for some help cleaning the poultry coop. To find poultry owners, check health food shops selling organic farm eggs, feed stores, classified ads for farm produce, and even racing pigeon clubs. My grandma lives on a 200-acre farm with lots of pines, which attract deer, says Linda George Olson of Ettrick, Wisconsin. Grandma gathers the deer pellets and mixes them with water for fertilizer. And here's the scoop. Zoo dew from the San Francisco Zoo's lions, tigers, and hoofstock was a popular fertilizer in our area, recalls California gardener Elizabeth Pomata. The company that produced Zoo Dew is no longer in business, but other zoos or animal refuges may have similar programs. Zoo Dew was safe because it was dried and composted, says a spokeswoman for the San Francisco Zoo. But beware, she warns, if you do find a source of this kind, avoid raw manure, which might have parasites. Author's note. My veterinarian agrees that wildcat droppings might be a hazard, but believes there's no risk from elephant manure unless you get stepped on. Horse manure. For ready access to a lot of good free manure, you don't have to live near a zoo. Go to your local riding stable instead. They like to have you come help, says Ruth Ann Davis of Tucson, Arizona. Ruth Ann's enthusiasm for this product is so great, she confesses. Sometimes she's there shoveling right out of the stalls, shooing away the horses to get elbow room. With manure as fresh as that, it's best to pile it somewhere first to age before spreading it on your garden, she advises. In the communities where Amish gardener farmer Joe Borntrager has lived, the clippity-clop of horse-drawn vehicles are a common sight, as the Amish religion shuns mechanized transportation. For them, horse manure is in plentiful supply. with this simple tip from Joe, it would be worth your while to find a manure supply in order to try his Amish planting method. In the fall, plow and get the garden all ready to plant. Cover it with a 4-inch layer of horse manure. In spring, make a trench in the manure for each row and just drop the seeds in. Cover and let grow. Horse versus cow. Be leery of horse manure, which heats up and is apt to burn plants, cautions Onalaska, Wisconsin octogenarian Bob Newhouse from experience gleaned during 67 years of gardening. I wouldn't use it at all, says the strict cow manure advocate. In fact, in the old days, cow manure was commonly called a cold manure, and horse manure was a hot manure, notes retired University of Wisconsin Extension agricultural agent Jim Ness. Horse manure is more likely to burn than cow manure because it has more nitrogen. To dissipate the nitrogen, advises Jim, mix the manure with a little dirt so the soil bacteria can help break it down. Then let it age 6 to 8 weeks before applying it. Lima beans. Perhaps you've heard gardeners hotly debating the relative merits of fertilizers. Chemical supplements versus cow manure, sheep dung versus chicken manure. Well, lima breeder Diane Cavas of Holman, Wisconsin, waxes enthusiastic about the virtues of llama manure. I've had rabbit pellets, and they last all summer, but llama beans break down easily in the soil, and it's nicely piled for you, always in the same corner of the yard. Author's note. Don't expect to save money by raising your own supply, though. The price for one llama is roughly equivalent to that of a new car. Large animals aren't the only ones whose manure can benefit the garden. Garden columnist Virgil Adams of the Adams Journal Constitution in Atlanta, Georgia, is lavish in his praise of the benefits to be gleaned from far smaller creatures, crickets. Intrigued by Virgil's enthusiasm for such an unconventional prize ingredient, I queried him, and he put me in touch with Bill Bricker of Augusta, Georgia, manufacturer of cricket crap. After retiring from the military, Colonel Bricker decided to parlay his love of organic gardening into a new career. Now he has a workforce of about 2 billion crickets helping him produce his product. Cricket crap is an extremely rich organic fertilizer resulting from the high protein diet of the commercial fish bait crickets which produce this manure. Unlike the majority of other fresh animal manures, Bricker's product is weed-free and non-bumming. It's available from Bricker's Organic Farms, Inc., 824-K, Sandbar Ferry Road, Augusta, Georgia, 30901. Now about fruit. For the best crops of tree fruits, such as apples and plums, Danny O'Day of San Francisco, California, pinches off surplus fruit, leaving only 2 to each cluster. Do this when the fruit are about the size of a pea, he advises. If you have apple scab, even on ornamental crab apple trees, be sure to dispose of all of the leaves in the fall. Do not leave them on the ground, and do not add them to your compost, or eventually the disease will infect your eating apples, as well as other apple trees in the area, cautions Sheila Coombs of New Hope, Minnesota. This, however, will not replace a good spraying regimen using fungicides, Sheeta counsels. Contact your regional agricultural agent for pamphlets on disease control. When New Hartford, Iowa farmer David Ballhagen was a little boy, he and his grandpa used to produce especially sweet watermelons by poking a hole through the rind of the growing melon and dripping a jug of sugar water into the flesh. Nowadays, David still grows incredible melons, though his grown-up technique is less exotic and less time-consuming, but not quite so much fun. Plant the seed in soft, well-drained ground, mixing fertilizer such as cottonseed meal into the planting holes. Avoid fertilizers high in nitrogen. For abundant yields, water daily. On unusually hot days, water twice a day. David watered his melons every day last season, and he says he had tons of watermelon. Author's note. Fertilizers high in nitrogen foster too much leafy growth and less fruit. Do not cut down your rhubarb in the fall, counsels David. Instead, sprinkle fireplace ashes over the plants. The ashes add potash and lime and help promote vigorous plants in the spring. When in doubt about the right time to move or prune a plant, I always keep in mind garden writer Christopher Lloyd's advice. The right time is when you have the time. That was said by Sarah Price. And sound, as well as movement, makes scarecrows more effective. So add noisemakers whenever possible, advises La Crosse County, Wisconsin 4-H assistant Bill Hansen. One of my favorites was of flexible, colored plastic tubing with metal wind chimes, he recalls. You have to know how to swear to really have some blistering words to prepare yourself for the invasion of the varmints, says artist Dale Kendrick, a native of Wichita, Kansas, and it has to be loud to scare them away. It does not work, Dale ruefully concedes, but it can make you feel better. I have 700 rose plants. People ask me which one is my favorite. That depends on the day, the time of day, and the mood I'm in. That's said by Roger Haynes. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler. You have been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. So long, until the next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138.